welcome to episode 154 of the Cricket Her Weekly. We are back in the UK and the weather is not quite as nice as it was in South Africa.
It's rather cold.
But we had a great trip. We really enjoyed the World Cup and the final was a week ago today, Sid.
Wow. Is it really a week ago?
It is. And we haven't done a video since the final. We did one after the semi-finals, but we haven't really talked about our thoughts on both the final and, I guess, the tournament as a whole. And it was an interesting outcome in that I guess it was the outcome that we were kind of expecting because Australia won. And a lot of people, as a result of that, have been having this conversation, this debate, are Australia too dominant and should we be concerned about Australia being too dominant? So have you got any thoughts on that, Sid?
My perspective on that has actually shifted a little bit during the World Cup, and I think that people that are just looking at Australia in that are actually missing the point. I think that the key concern that we should have going forwards over the next 3 or 4 years is not that Australia themselves alone are too dominant, but that Australia, England and India are too dominant between them. Now, of those three, there's obviously a sort of, you know, a quiet battle going on between those, and Australia are clearly on top of that at the moment.
Yeah,
you know, but England and India are both pushing to challenge them, and they're both doing the right things to challenge them. You know, we've got the WPL, which we're going to talk about later. We've got the 100. We've got the regional setup in this country. All those things are pushing towards, mm-hmm. trying to challenge Australia. The real concern for me is that the gap between those three and the rest is growing to a rather disturbing degree. Now, that might seem a little bit of a strange thing to say if you watch Pakistan play in this tournament, for example, because, you know, Pakistan had a couple of decent games, you know, and there's no doubt whatsoever that Pakistan are a better side now than they were, you know, 4, 5, 6 years ago.
Yeah.
When they came over to England in 2016, they were very weak. England smashed them all over the park. They're a better team than that. But it feels almost less likely that they're going to win a game against India or Australia or England. You know, the West Indies are just going backwards. New Zealand are clearly, you know, in a lot of trouble in that they just don't appear to have any strength in depth whatsoever. They're unclear what their best 11 is. They've got worries about their domestic competition. They can't really decide what they want to do with that domestic competition. All of these worries really stem from the kind of financial worries of the teams below those big three. And we have talked before about the West Indies in particular. Their financial situation is really quite dire. And I think that the biggest concern that the community needs to have over the next few years is to ensure that we don't wind up effectively with two World Cups being played. One World Cup being played between England, India and Australia to see who wins the title. Another World Cup being played between everyone else to see, you know, who comes fourth, kind of thing. That's my perspective on the entire tournament.
Now, okay, that's really interesting.
That's my perspective on the entire tournament. Let's move on to talk a little bit about the final itself, Raf, because, you know, this is actually a pretty positive game. What did you make of the actual final and South Africa's challenge to Australia?
Well, it was another example of Australia doing that thing that they do where it looks like they're struggling with the bat and then they put on 156 runs and you just felt that that was always going to be really tough for South Africa's challenge and for South Africa to chase. And so it proved, and they'd kind of lost it within the first six overs when they only put 22 runs on the board in the power play. I think that to some extent you could say, well, it was quite a one-sided final. But on the other hand, Australia did make mistakes. And I guess that my takeaway from watching Australia in their semi-final against India and in that final against South Africa is that, yes, they did win, but they are also being challenged. And I think that they are increasingly being challenged a bit more in World Cups. And I know in a previous episode I talked about the fact that they didn't have it all their own way in 2020. They didn't have it all their own way in 2023. And I think that that is important nuance to the overall, you know, we might look and go, well, they've won another World Cup, but there is nuance to that. And I did tweet afterwards that I think that the gap is closing. So that's my take on the final. If you'll allow me a bit of indulgence on the tournament as a whole, Sid, one of the things that was
really... We'll allow you some indulgence, Raf.
I think one of the things that was really exciting for me was that early on in the tournament, I can't remember if we talked about this on videos or not, but certainly I wrote a piece about the opening game for The Guardian, where I talked about the fact that we're in in a bar in Pahl, and nobody was watching the cricket. And there was just very little interest, and we were sort of meeting people and talking to them. And we met a lot of taxi drivers who had not really any idea that the tournament was even going on. And then by the end, South Africa in the final, and our taxi driver started to know what was going on. They'd be, oh, and South Africa are in the final. And then, and the best thing that happened was that at Cape Town Airport, we're coming home and we're coming through security. One of the security guards stops me, and I was a bit nervous because I'm being stopped by security. And he points at my T-shirt, and I was wearing a T-shirt I was given by G-Sport that says 2023, the year of women's sport. And he just stopped me and he pointed at that and he said, yes, it is. Our Proteas women just got to the final of the World Cup. And I was like, that's so cool, because, you know, it just felt like there was this sort of sea change in attitude and in awareness of women's cricket in South Africa that kind of unfolded before our eyes while we were out there. So actually, it feels like there's been a big change and a really exciting, positive change. And I was really glad that we could be in South Africa to witness that change.
Yeah, and there was such a great atmosphere inside the ground for the final, wasn't there? There was a real, palpable sense of, excitement. And, although South Africa lost, actually, the fans, they were well aware that they were the underdogs, and that they'd given it a good shot. I think the fans definitely felt that. It was really interesting to see the South African fans' reaction compared to the Indian fans' reaction after the semi-final. A lot of the Indian fans on social media were really quite upset with the team and was like,
especially
with Harmanpreet, she's let India down, which I think is most unfair. I don't think she let India down at all. And if you'd seen Harmanpreet with tears in her eyes just before she went into the press conference, trying to ensure that she pulled herself together just before she went into that press conference, you'd know that, she felt that, worse than any fan did.
I think that overall, what we might think about as well from this World Cup is that maybe it's about the game that we didn't see, which is that kind of elusive England v Australia final, which would have been the big test for John Bull, wouldn't it, Sid?
Yeah, it would have been. And you always felt, as I've mentioned before, I think the point of the John Bull thing was that it gave England the opportunity to challenge Australia if Australia played well. So what England's big challenge going into the tournament, if they want to win the tournament, they have to go, well, we need to do something that will beat Australia even if they play well. Okay. And John Bull gave them that opportunity to do that. But it's a risky strategy, no doubt. It didn't quite come off in the semi-final.
But we never saw them have that test. But we are going to see it. In a few months' time, it's going to be on us before we know it. It's the Ashes, Sid.
Yeah, and what's going to happen there is going to be really interesting. I'm not convinced. The Beamsy and Brit podcast, which is from an Australian perspective, they were talking on that about how they think that England are going to be able to challenge Australia in this summer's Ashes. I feel quite unconvinced about that. I still think that, John Bull is a very high-risk strategy that gives England a chance to win. But I think that, it's chucking all your chips on red, kind of. I know nothing about gambling, but I think that's what you say. You're chucking all your chips on red.
Yeah, but you're at least doing something.
Yeah, you are.
So
but what, I would
so
still expect
that. What they
said
on that podcast is that they think that this Ashes is going to be more competitive.
Yeah,
than the
I'm still unconvinced about that. I still think that Australia are quite a long way ahead of England, and I think that we'll see a similar result to last time, but we'll see.
I think it is going to be the big challenge, because it's one thing to play John Bull against teams like Pakistan and Ireland when you know that you're better than them. But the big challenge that England always have against Australia is a psychological one. We know we've lost to them so much that so often they just, that's what happened at Canterbury in 2019 against Elise Perry, right? It was like, well, we know we've lost, so everyone's just going to play stupid shots and get out. And they just kind of folded in on themselves. And that's why you so often see Australia racking up these really big wins against England, because I think it's so much in the head. And John Bull was about trying to escape from that mindset of kind of timidity, which has been traditionally a bit how England have lost big games. And so I think it's going to be really interesting to see how it stacks up as a strategy against Australia, and also how it stacks up as a strategy in a 5-day test match. Because the thing about Baz Bull is that it's a test strategy, and it's about playing tests in an entertaining way. So if John Ball is trying to kind of copy that strategy, then England have got to like really go at it in every day of that 5-day test. And actually what you risk happening is that the test is over in 3 days because England have gone at it way too hard. And there'll be a certain irony in that given how hard everyone's campaigned for that fifth day and saying, oh, it's so important. But we'll have to wait and see. But I think, yeah, that is going to be the big test. And that is, it was a bit disappointing that we didn't see that encounter that we'd hoped for in the World Cup. But, you know, England should have won their semi-final then, shouldn't they?
Yeah, no, that's entirely down to England, and they know that.
Okay. So, Sid, it's the big one. It's the Women's Premier League. It started yesterday, and we watched the first game. We're recording this ahead of the second and third games, which we're hoping to watch today. So, yeah, it's upon us. And it's very exciting. What have you made of the build-up to the WPL?
Well, I think it's been really interesting. I think that we've seen two things in particular which kind of have struck me. The first is that, you know, this kind of reiterates a point that you've made in some of your academic work about the 100, which is that by creating a new competition and by adding showbiz and razzmatazz and, you know, a big trophy with bling on it.
It is very bling, the trophy, isn't it? Wow.
By adding those things, you create something that the media are going to latch onto in a way that they would never have done with, you know, a sort of revamped provincial T20 competition. However much money the BCCI could potentially have thrown at a revamped provincial T20, you know, it was never going to attract the kind of attention of the media in the way that the WPL has. And there's absolutely no doubt that it has. You know, this is all over the back pages of the Indian newspapers. It's even, you know, making its way towards the front pages, you know, and those dramas, the drama we've seen around Deandra Dottin, which we'll talk about in a little bit. But, you know, that's really got people talking. It's got people gossiping and, you know, it's got the social media hashtagging. Yeah. So that's been brilliant. The other thing that I've been struck by, and I hadn't really thought about this before, is the extent to which, you know, Indian fans have felt kind of, you can see how excited the fans are. And I can understand now, which I hadn't before, about how Indian fans have been slightly shortchanged by what's happened over the past, you know, 10 years in women's cricket. Because Indian fans have had to watch their stars all go over to Australia and play in the WBBL, over to England and play in the Kier Super League and the 100. And now, for the first time, all of the star players are coming to India.
Yeah.
And, you know, you've literally seen people on social media going, oh my God, I can't believe that all these star players are coming to India. And I actually get to see, you know, Nat Siver and Heather Knight and Meg Lanning and Beth Mooney and all these people in person play at the stadium. And that sense of excitement from those players actually being in India and being part of something that's India's own, that it's their thing and that it's their, there's a sense of ownership there and a sense that they deserved this. They deserved to have, you know, those players come to India for once rather than just having, you know, Harmanpreet go for the WBBL and, you know, hit runs there, or Jemima come to the 100 and hit runs for the Northern Superchargers. So, you know, a great sense of excitement and for the sense that the Indian fans really deserve this. And that's been wonderful to see.
Great. Okay.
Now, so what about the cricket though, Ralph?
Shall we talk about Dottin first? Because that was the news that kind of broke ahead of the first game yesterday. Maybe it was even the night before, that Dottin, we think, was in India, but we're not 100% sure. But basically, she's not going to play in the WPL.
This was a class, before you get to the statement, this was a classic case of what cricket authorities always do in these kind of situations. Yeah. They release a really minimal statement.
Yeah.
Which tells you nothing, and then social media fills in all the gaps with all of the ridiculous, you know, innuendo and speculation. Deandra Dottin's been chosen to go on the space program, and she's gone up to the International Space Station in a Chinese rocket, or she's been kidnapped by aliens,
speculation. And anger against the giants, basically. And also some kind of weird conspiracy that one of the other teams had, kicked her in the shins or something so she didn't pass the medical
conspiracy test. It's all about trying to get more Australians in because
Kim Garth replaced her. So clearly it's just a conspiracy on behalf of Rachel Haynes.
Cricket authorities, if you release these really vague statements, people will just make up the gaps.
Had a new statement, but it's still very vague. So basically it says, this is what the giants say: we were unable to obtain a medical clearance before the deadline. So, yeah, and they kind of say, oh, we hope that she'll come back and play for us next year if we can get that kind of medical report that signs her off. So she's kind of, so she's not been cleared to play because of a medical report, but the intrigue then is that Dotton herself has tweeted saying, I'm not injured, I'm fine. And you're like, well, what's going on there? There's, what else can it be? There's some kind of mystery here. There's something. And I'm going to say this, Sid, if this was men's cricket, somebody would be doing some digging and we'd know within 24 hours what was really going on. So if we want true equality, and if the WPL is about true equality in women's cricket, then somebody needs to dig that out. I'm a journalist, I'm trying, but it's quite difficult to do it at a distance.
Yeah.
And we know there's a press pack out there following the WPL, quite a sizable press pack. So one of them needs to do the digging and find out what's gone on here.
Do the
because
digging.
There's some kind of
find
mystery.
The bodies.
Anyway, we don't know what it is, I'm afraid, but hopefully all will be revealed by some intrepid journalist. So the first match, I didn't quite know what to make of it from a kind of overall competition perspective, because obviously it was really positive for the Mumbai Indians to come out and hit over 200 in the first game. That's what you want to see.
One of the biggest scores ever in a domestic professional cricket match.
Really positive batting. It's great for the crowd when one team is kind of hitting sixes, and great also to see Harmanpreet Kaur, who seems to have mysteriously been rehabilitated by all of those Indian fans who a week ago or 10 days ago after the semi-final were telling her that she was an idiot. So she obviously batted brilliantly, and that's kind of nice because you've got that sort of that home heroine then, haven't you, doing the job for her team. So that was a really good performance from her. So that's great. But then on the other hand, then in response, the Giants really messed it up, and basically the game was over within like two or three overs of their reply, basically.
Well, it's almost like the Giants' entire strategy rests on Beth Mooney and Ash Gardner, being brilliant. And they have been, they were the two players. If you were going to have two players of the tournament in the World Cup, it would have been them. Beth Mooney with her, performance in the final, and Ash Gardner with her performance over the course of the entire game.
Yeah.
But, Ash Gardner, as soon as she started to get knocked around in the bowling, she visibly, she's like, I don't know how to deal with this. It's almost like she's never suffered that kind of treatment before. Mm. And she was just like looking around. She was looking at film, and the fielding wasn't great. The fielding wasn't backing her up. And that potentially is something that we're going to see over this tournament, right? Because beyond the kind of the international pros that we know about, a lot of those, the Indian players are still effectively amateurs at the moment. I mean, from this tournament onwards, they'll be able to call themselves professionals, but basically they're still amateurs. So they're still quite a long way behind. The fielding is not going to be of the same quality that we'd come to expect,
as we've seen in the KSL. We saw 100%. Really poor fielding in the early days,
and those things have developed.
So that will develop. Yeah.
But Ash Gardner was looking around. She just didn't know how to deal with it. Mm. And when she came out to bat, then she obviously was like already not in a great frame of mind, and she just batted like somebody that didn't really want to be there already at that point.
I mean, it's very early days in the competition.
Oh, absolutely.
I think it's going to be tough for the Giants. And the big question is, obviously we saw Beth Mooney retire hurt. What's going to happen? Now, we did look for some news about this before we came on air, and we couldn't find anything. There's a question about whether she's going to play today, but there's also a question about whether it could be the end of the tournament for her.
Well, a lot of Australian fans on social media calling on Cricket Australia to bring her back now, because it's like, we need her to be there in the Ashes. Now, that's really interesting, isn't it,
Raph? It is really interesting.
If she goes home, our understanding is that she loses a lot of money, because she only gets the money if she plays all the games.
Yeah.
So, here's a big thing, is she going to... And Beth Mooney is a big play-through-the-pain kind of player, right?
Absolutely.
She's a warrior.
That's what she does.
Not literally, she's
not
a giant.
But, she's not actually a warrior.
But, she's a soldier. She will play through the pain.
Yeah.
But, Is she looking at that knee injury going, I need to play through the pain because I could pay off my mortgage when I get back?
Yeah,
or
talking...
is she looking at that injury going, I should go back to Australia and go into rehab because the Ashes is more important?
We're talking big sums of money now for this franchise competition that we wouldn't have seen before. And we are going to, this is the first of this is the first of what is going to be a series of dilemmas.
Yeah, we've seen the same thing in the men's game.
It's going to have to be a negotiation between the board and the player and the franchise team, based on what's going to happen.
Yeah, so. And it's exactly the same dilemmas that England have got currently that they're facing this week with Ben Stokes, who's going,
I'm injured. I'm sorry, I'm just tuning out here. This is boring.
Everyone knows what I'm talking about. Yeah, it would be really interesting to see what happens.
Yeah. Anyway, so shall we get on and watch the second game, Sid?
Yeah, I can't wait. Really excited.
Cool. Thanks for tuning in, everyone. See you in a week.
Bye.